The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Goldie's Closet episode 104. You've seen my tweets. You've seen my Twitters. I love sports entertainment, everybody. Don't get me wrong. I love athletes, but I've been on unlucky in love lately with some people standing me up and not showing. So we were going to have, I guess, three podcasts in a row. I will say it. It's a marathon of hot chick female artists, boss babes, divas. So just bear with me because we want to bring you different variety, different things. If you've been listening to Goldie's Closet, all of these episodes, all of these years originating on Russo's brand, Bucket Full of Chicken Necks, I want to say thank you. And I want to give you an honest reason why I choose the guests that I do, because I like solid, non-mother trucker, non-flakes. So without further ado, I want to bring on a very beautiful woman that I've seen in Nashville who's been nice to me. I don't like to bring on bitches to this podcast. I like to bring on people that I want to build up and I want to see them flourish and do what I can, do my part. I think it's really important as a woman to build up other women and find out ways to work with them. When guys, I got to be honest with you, there is a reason that I have loved men my whole life. I have been best friends with men my whole life because you guys just, I don't know, you get mad, maybe you take a swing, you take a swat, and then you forget about it. You go to the bar and you have a beer and you go home and you grab your remote control and you flip something on, and rarely do you bring this shit up again. A woman does, but I have just been friends with men, and you're so dear to me. And if you're listening to this and you're a dude, then God bless you, and I appreciate you more than you'll ever know. And if you're a female listening to this, then you got to be one of the good ones. And I appreciate you that for that all the more. I thank you. So without further ado, I bring on our 104th Goldie's Closet guest, Realm Network, Russo's brand. This is Justine Blazer. She's beautiful. She's confident. She runs a production company. It is called, and let me look at the correct spelling. I'm going to put my glasses on for a second. Don't be mad. It's 1017 Studios, spelled T-E-N, number 7, T-E-E-N Studios. It's in Nashville, Tennessee. It's attached to an incredible warehouse. The vibe, the everything, the essence is to die for. Whether you are in Nashville, Tennessee, or you are in Paris, or you are in the Caribbean, or it doesn't matter. It's 2021, everyone, and things are virtual. They are remote. There are ways, if you are burning to cut that first song, to record an album, to do something artistic, then this is the woman for you. She's a singer-songwriter. She's an artist. She's a dancer. She comes from a long lineage of modeling and just gorgeous parents and you name it. You want to have somebody with that kind of shine stepping up, stepping in, and backing you with support. This is how you get a hit record. This is how you get a break. You've got to start out with the right coach, the right mentor, and the right producer. So we bring her on. A warm Realm Network and brand family applause, Miss Justine Blazer. Ooh, what's up? Look at you.
My leopard.
You got some yellow nails going. Where are you right now? It's so interesting.
Today my studio, I just have the lights off, so
I love it. I want to see it sometime. It looks really cool. I'll do your fanfare after I find out a little bit more about you, just because I looked and I want to make sure that I tell the right story and everything. So while it is live, it's not live, it's unlisted, and I go back and edit anything out or change anything, or if there's something like you just don't like or whatever, just raise your hand and I'll write down the time and punch it out. It's really easy.
Okay.
Yeah, super cool.
We gotta get that photo shoot scheduled too at some point.
I would absolutely love that, because you're just so— am I feeding back or are you? Hold on.
It's probably me.
Are you on a, you're on a computer or iPhone?
Touch. Try it.
Or I can get, well, is that going to wreck your vibe then to have the headphones?
No, it's all right. Is it better now?
Yeah, you look, you still look cute though.
Thanks.
You've got boobs and that's what anybody cares about. So,
well,
hey, I've got grandma top on.
Had to, you know, whatever.
Oh, I look like a grandma compared to you.
No, you look great. I like your pink.
I know, but I don't like it. So,
okay.
I look like a grandma. Give me 5 seconds and I'm changing my top. I'm not looking like a grandma compared to you.
Well, you said you look hot, so I'm just following direction.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there you go. That looks cute.
For guys that are watching, we appreciate you subscribing to the Russo's brand in the Realm Network. Hello.
That's so cute.
All right, that was a fast change. This is something that girls do. They dress, females dress for other females. If you don't know this, if you're married, you know this. But there's a thing that I have gone through for years where guys never do this unless they're really gay. But even really gay guys have so much taste and so much style that they don't do this. And that's this start to try something on and then I get really angry about it. And I'm like, I don't like it. And I take it off. And by the time I'm done, like my entire bedroom is just like a graveyard of like outfits that are, and then I keep this crap thinking that maybe someday I'll look better in it, but I never do. And then there's a stack of pants, like when I'm 4 sizes slimmer that I'll fit into. So women just have this like whole thing. I don't know if you do or not, but yeah, I wasn't happy with what I had on because our guest was so hot that I was intimidated and needed to change. So, all right. So I know Justine Blazer just from around town. She's like a legend, a living legend, a current legend, but I don't know her story. And being that I told everybody on Twitter today, I'm tired of wrestlers standing me up for interviews. I said, we're going to have this like marathon of like the last one this Thursday. We're going to have 3 hot chicks in a row. So I'm just like, because hot chicks always show up. You're dependable. And you're not a flake. So, well, guys, you're going to have to listen to some girl talk and some girly things until we get some wrestlers that actually aren't drunk, hungover, and show up the next day. It's all the same, though. It's all so entertainment. True. So I want to hear your story. I don't know where you're from. I don't know when you came here. You're a little bit of a force to be reckoned with because you're not only hot, you're not only a singer, you write. You produce, what else do you do? I want to get into that. And we want to use some of these sound clips to put together for a great promo, just to sort of a tribute to you in town, because you're a lovely woman, you know,
It's
nice to have that and the powerhouse behind it. Cause the producing and everything that when I heard about that, that's no joke. So floor is yours. Yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from Detroit.
So oh.
I know you're from Minnesota. My mom's from Minnesota.
No, where?
She grew up in St. Paul, but we have cousins in Hibbing.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
I was born in St. Paul. I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota.
That's awesome. My mom was Miss St. Paul in 1970. So that's her like claim to fame.
Get out of here. Really?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole family's hot. I like this.
You probably saw her on like parades and floats, and she modeled and all kinds of stuff. So yeah,
I'm gonna look up your mom. Tell me later is what I do to do that. I can't wait. I'm sure that I did.
I'll send you an old photo of my mom. I took it. I visited my mom not too long ago, and I visited her, and I took all these old photos from her, like old modeling comp card and stuff. It was hilarious, but it was awesome to see. You know,
isn't that cool? I love that. Yeah. I wonder how many people listening, watching, have some of that lineage. I would love if you're listening to this. I'd love to hear that. And before we even find out more from St. Paul, Minnesota, or from Detroit, this is a pet peeve of mine that it's ending right now. I'm changing this. Everybody, where do people find you? Where do they follow you? I'm not waiting until the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. I try Twitter, but I don't do that much. And I don't do I try the TikTok thing, but I can't. I don't know. But anyway, Facebook and Instagram, just search Justine Blazer and you'll find it. So.
And spell that for everybody listening and not watching.
Yeah, it's Justine and Blazer like the jacket, Blazer.
Done. All right. We're changing that one. I'm going to make sure every podcast from the get-go, out of the gate, we know where to find people. Because sometimes people don't make it till the very end. And maybe right now, If you're not watching, you need to watch. If you're just doing the free gimmick and the listen on Spotify, iTunes, all that jazz, you need to check out this chick because she's just beautiful. So, okay, so we're in Detroit. Now what happens?
Okay, yeah. So my dad worked for Ford Motor Company. My mother actually owned a dance studio for 12 years. So
what?
I know. So I pretty much grew up surrounded by the arts. And then I was teaching dance and, you know, doing modeling and doing, you know, theater and singing and whatever I could do to perform, I was doing it. And then I moved at 18. I worked at a theme park called Cedar Point, and I was in their shows for 1 year. And then I moved to New York the year after that, and then I modeled for 6 years all what? Around the country for auto shows. So I did that, and then I got my band together and I moved to Nashville, and now I've been in Nashville it'll be 10 years in next year, so I'm over almost 10 years now.
You did the modeling gimmick too? You did all of this?
Yeah, the modeling was something I just did for fun, for money, that kind of helped pay for the music stuff. It was never like anything I wanted to do as like a serious career, you know, because modeling is so harsh. I mean, being in anything where you're like ridiculed and told your body is terrible and you're cutting your hair and do this and do that, you know, it's not good for the mind. So it was something that I could deal with, this sort of BS of the music business. I could deal with it, but I did not have much of a tolerance when it came to the modeling, because I felt it was so superficial. It's like, you're paying me just to show up and do something like based on my appearance. I felt there was a more depth, you know, to me. And so I just felt like it wasn't for me, but it was like a good time in my life because I was able to do a lot of stuff and get paid to do it and travel everywhere, you know? So that was really fun.
But I want to see some, do we have pictures of this that we can show? I mean, not now. You can send them to me later.
Yeah, I do. I have a whole book of like my old modeling stuff. So yeah,
I'd love to see that. Please send me to the email, the gimmick. Yeah. I would love to see that. Yeah. And I did. I modeled forever. I still do. And it is completely superficial. And it's just really great training for getting hated on the internet. You know, I was hated on as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, told I was ugly at 5 or not pretty enough at 6. So, you know, luckily for me, I was able to stomach it pretty well because I made good money and used that money to help my mom, who was really sick, and it went to aid her hospitalization, and the place, you know, everything didn't get paid for. So, but I got in a lot of trouble for my mouth with the modeling, with talking back and sassing and saying crude things, because once you've been in that world, anything goes, and especially theater. Like what you learn at an early age in theater is crazy. It's just like, I think what you can learn in theater back, at least in my day, is more than like what kids could learn online right now. Cause it's like, I really do. Like just the stuff that I saw that went on, I was just like, even if you're online, even if you're a kid online, I think you're still sheltered to like maybe what that stuff really means. Did you see anything funky growing up or no? Like, if you're in that business, that's a lot of stuff.
There was some weird stuff that had happened. But, you know, I honestly, it wasn't as bad as until I started dating this guy when I was like too young. He was 20 years older than me. That's when I saw some real shit. You know what I mean?
You look back at that and think like, you would have done it over differently, because I did that run too. And then I did the younger, and it's like, I don't know. I think it's interesting and it kind of shapes you into who you are today. But then I look back at, I thought that I was like, oh, I must be so all that, you know, like this older guy likes me. Now I look at it like, oh, I was dating a pedophile.
Pretty much, I know. Exactly. Like we had no business being together. And it was just like, I don't know. It was, you know, when you're that age, it's like, you don't even think things through. You have no basis of like anything. So you're just kind of rolling with it. I was already traveling, and it's just like, oh, cool. Yeah. Let's meet up. Let's go fly to the Bahamas. Let's go to Jamaica. Let's go Mexico. Let's go here. Let's go, you know, and it's just like all this really fast paced kind of thing. And I never saw anyone like do cocaine before, you know what I mean? And it was just like really crazy. And it was just being in that whole thing. Like I never did that stuff, but it was just seeing that stuff. It was a big reality check and wake up call. Like, wow, this is not my little like home. You know, this is the real world, and I'm surrounded by some serious, like, interesting people. It was scary at some points too, because I was also living in New York, and I remember taking the subway at like 3 o'clock in the morning by myself. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, but you know, I don't know. I mean, it was just so many dumb things I did, and luckily nothing major happened. But my goodness, I think back and I'm like, wow, I was really stupid.
Do you have kids now?
No kids. Okay. Yeah, so neither, just been able to kind of.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Mean, I'm not against kids. It just never happened. So I'm just like, well, this is where I'm at, and if it happens, cool. If it doesn't happen, like, then I'm just going to accept that as like, this is the path for me. So I have my cats, and I have my music. My music is my kid. You know, it's like cranky, it's tired, it wakes me up in the middle of the night, spends all my money, you know, that's my kid. So
totally relate. I was going to say, the part about the kids is I didn't have kids just because I know how I was, and I knew that God would bless me with the most revengeful, terrorizing female. It's just the stuff that I did as a kid. And it was so different when I was younger. Like, there wasn't social media, and there wasn't a way to really helicopter and keep tabs. And I think back, like, I would tell my parents I'm going this place, and then I wasn't going that place. And I wonder, like, did they ever wonder where I was? Or I guess my dad was at work and my mom wasn't feeling well, or watching soap operas maybe. But I mean, yeah, it was just so different. And I would get on, not the subway, but the bus system at 7 years old to go downtown Minneapolis to go to, I can't remember what it was called. It was some rock and roll, like a head shop where they sold like pipes and whatnot. But they had leather jackets and fringe and glasses and hats for stage. And I was just like, that's all I wanted to do. And like, my mom would die if she knew her 7-year-old child was taking a
bus. That's a little crazy. That's too young. That's too young, Goldie.
But I mean, I wasn't looking at anybody. I didn't want to. I was going to look at rock and roll paraphernalia. Like,
That's cool. That's cool though. But yeah, man, you got some balls, girl.
15, went to Japan when I was 15. Looking for a guy that I met in high school that graduated, that I was just, yeah. I mean, just again. So I get it, what you're saying about the music being, you know, your cranky kid and everything like that. And music you do, like, what do you have out right now? Like, what are you working on right now? I saw your last video. What was the name of that one? I helped with the billboard.
Just Sing. Yeah, Just Sing. So, yeah, we're still promoting it and stuff. You know, it's getting some plays on, like, the Country Network, and we're working on some other networks and stuff like that. But yeah, it's cool. Like, we just, you know, did that back in the fall, and then I had that, and then I've Plague, that was a single before it, and then I put out an album the year before in 2019. I put out a 12 song album, and then that was my 7th studio album. So I'm working on my new single called Good Trouble, and I'm also working on EP, and I'm just writing a ton for other people and Sync, and it's just really busy.
And here we are watching Justine's video that you can't see if you are listening to the audio, and you can't hear it if you are watching it, because everything is getting flagged on YouTube for copyright infringement, even if it's the actual artist's material. So please go look at Justine Blazer's Just Sing. And I'm annoyed because I can't even play my own shit anymore without it getting flagged on my own channel, and it's just psychotic. And here we will reconvene with the interview, and I appreciate you guys all putting up with me and allowing some growing pains. Thanks, guys.
There you go.
Here's me. I was just like, wow, this is so great. And then, of course, my mic's muted. That was beautiful. That was just beautiful. I've seen it before. I've seen parts of it before, but I don't think I watched like the entire thing over. You hit some great notes at the end that, you know, back before I was mangled, I could probably attempt to hit. But that was really, really beautiful. So what's the inspiration behind that? Just something that, like, you wanted to, did they have anything to do with COVID or being locked up, or like, where did it come from? I love hearing where people's stories come from.
Yeah, kind of. We wrote it back in August, me and Melissa Lee, and it was just one of those kind of impulsive type songs and moments, just kind of being, you know, on lockdown and the whole COVID thing. And just it was an opportunity for me to feel like I really want to sing, have a song where I kind of show off my ability to sing and just have something that's really big and inspirational. As corny as that stuff is, I don't have a whole lot of music like that. I really don't. A lot of my stuff's like real edgy and kind of sassy and smartassy. So I wanted something a little different in the catalog, and I just wrote it, and there we are. So I feel like it's resonated a lot. A lot of people have related to it on some, you know, on some scale. It doesn't necessarily have to mean, you know, in a literal sense, like singing. It can be anything, fill in the blank, just whatever. But whatever it is that's you're sort of on the fence about, just do it. Do it anyway, despite, you know, any sort of, you know, pullback.
Is your family supportive of things? Because I'm sure people are listening thinking like, well, I'd like to just do this or just do that, but I've got a full-time job, or I've got this or I've got that. Like, I always want to try to find ways for people that are inspired by something to do it. You know what I mean? Like, is entertainment what you've always done? Is your family, obviously you said your mom was really supportive. Is your family now supportive, or whoever you're with, your partner, are people supportive of everything?
They are. They are, definitely. I mean, growing up, it was sort of like, I think people thought I was in this like cute little phase, and it was just this, you know, a little, and I think they thought I was going to grow out of it. And I remember being like a little kid, like, you know, 5, 6 years old. I remember being first grade, and you had to do like the career, like piece of paper or whatever, and you had to check off what you wanted to be when you grew up. And I remember they had nurse, doctor, lawyer, teacher, you know, police, and I was looking for the singer box, and there didn't exist. And I'm like, well, where's the singer box? So I remember writing it in myself, and I knew that I wanted to do that, and I didn't know, society, school, everything told me, no, that's not what you're supposed to do. And I was like, no, I am going to do this somehow, some way. And I felt like I had a pushback more or less from society, and my parents just kind of went along with it, like, oh, that's cute. And then finally I was like, no, I'm serious. I'm going to move. I'm going to make this happen. Like, I don't care. And so they supported me, like, I guess just in attitude, but never financially. It was something that I always had to fund myself. I didn't come from all this money. Like, I earned every single thing, like my whole studio, like all my gear, like my van, my trailer, like my PA system, my lights, my camera, everything. I've worked for it and bought it and earned it, and just through the process. So, you know, I guess that's the moral of the story. And you're a hard worker too, so you understand this, but I didn't come from the opportunity of having like rich parents and everyone just kind of backing me. I did it all myself. I guess it's more rewarding to some extent. And I feel like there's just more I have to prove to myself to earn those things. And it's more fulfilling. And I work harder because of that.
Oh, I love it. And I'm going to ask another question. But before I get to that, I was just going to say, I too remember the career day of looking for the singer, entertainer, dancer box. And there wasn't. So yeah. I remember somebody came and talked about different, not just a doctor, but different divisions of it. And so the one that paid the most for me was the gynecologist selection. So I wrote in singing gynecologist. And then like somebody asked me to explain that. And I said, well, when I'm examining a woman's uterus, I can sing to her and make her feel more comfortable. So anyway, I think I got in some trouble for that. But now when I go to the gynecologist, let me just tell you, guys, if you haven't been to the gynecologist, you need to. You would have a different lease on life. So especially when they're doing certain things down there, like I will sing and I'll say, I'm sorry, doctor, but I'm going to sing, and I'm going to sing as high as I can. And I think they just laugh. And then the squeeze ball. I've always got squeeze balls in my hand, like, ah, this hurts. But the thing about... you know, I've had a ton of help from everybody, from friends, family, from just supporters. People have always helped me with things, and I always ask why, and it's because they said, we already see you working really hard, like you're obviously very serious about it. It was hard for me for a long time sometimes just to receive those gifts and take it, but these days when somebody's like, I'd like to help you out, especially during COVID, I'm like, okay, thank you. You know, yeah. I'm much better at saying thank you, but... I want to talk about your studio and get into talking about your production, because when I look around my place, and this is so important, guys, for listening and watching, when there is something that you want to do and when it is a dream, whether you have money or whether you don't have money, there is always a way if you start opening up your mouth and talking. The person that's going to be who's coming out on Thursday, which isn't aired yet, it was Kinsey Rose. She's in Nashville. And she is talking about this new video that she has, When Trucks Fly. And I'm looking at this video and then I found out, I'm like thinking like, I'm counting how much it costs. Like, okay, I know that's that. This is this. And I'm just like, where are people getting this money? Not jealous, more like strategic thinking. How can I do something this cool? And she just told me about some people helping her out and one thing led to another. And this person had this and this. And it was just the coolest story. It was so organic and a godsend and meant to be. And I love that stuff, but I love looking around and knowing, and this is what I wanted people to listen to, like my tripod right there. I do photography, like knowing that I had an extra $60 from tips and putting it in an envelope, doing the Dave Ramsey style, hiding it and waiting until I had 60 times 10 so that I could buy that tripod. And there's something about being very disciplined. Like if you really want something, then you know you can want it and you can hope for the law of attraction and for stuff to fall in your lap, but you got to go out there and hustle for it too. And that might be, you know, giving up a bunch of stuff for a while. Might be cutting out things that you like or taking shorter showers or, you know, doubling up with your neighbor on the trash or whatever you need to think of to conserve money and then physically save that so that you can buy the things that you need for what your dream is. But don't just think that shit's going to just fall in your lap, bros. It's not.
Yeah, that's absolutely like a fact because, you know, you have to just prioritize like what your goals are and what you want. So absolutely. What you just said was 100% facts. It's just, you know, something that I do with my clients is I will kind of sit them down and we will have a conversation about having an outline and just some sort of goals. And, you know, it's something that never was really done for me. Like we talked about it in school, like from a general sense, but like I mentioned earlier, you know, we never had anything specifically asking you like what you want to do and how to get there, you know? So I felt like I wasted a lot of time just trying to like wander around and figure out how to do this stuff because I didn't have anyone to really ask and I had to kind of figure it out just by trial and error. So now I challenge my clients to really make sure that they understand what their brand is, who their audience is, and how they're going to get there. And like you said earlier, money is just a tool. Like I did take the financial piece by Dave Ramsey course, and it helped me immensely. I really was able to benefit a lot from that. But it's just teaching you the discipline of the money is a tool. So it's no different than like money is, pretend like money is this brick, this imaginary brick I'm holding. So it can just sit here in my hand, do nothing. It can build a house if I have enough of them, or I can smash a window if I throw it, you know? So money is just a tool to kind of get you where you need to be. So I look at money as not emotional at all. Like it's just like, okay, so if something costs X, then how do I get that amount of money to get X? And you just sort of change your mindset versus holding you back. It's just, how do I wait? How do I figure it out? Like you said, you save that $60. For me, it was like, I worked Broadway, you know, I did the Broadway shows for a lot of years. And I remember when they asked me to start doing Sundays and I did not want to do Sundays, but I took committed to two Sundays a month and I decided to put 100% of that in a separate fund. And that would help to pay for my microphones, my studio equipment, my plugins, whatever it is. And you'd be surprised. In a very short amount of time, I had just a specific amount of money strictly serving its purpose and giving it an assignment. And you're able to kind of look at things a little bit more objectively versus just this whole kind of, you know, intertwining mess. If you start to kind of give things a group and an assignment and you realize you can get there pretty fast. So that's kind of how I do it.
No, I love it. I got hit by a semi like some years ago and I mean, just plowed into, like nobody wanted to do anything about it. And I didn't, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I didn't want to do the ambulance thing because I was so close to the hospital. I'm like, I don't want a $2,700 bill when I can drive myself. Yeah, I was hurt, but I was like, I'm going. I ended up getting like in trouble for that. Like I could have gotten more money for my lawsuit if I would have acted like the other people who barely got touched that were like, oh, my neck, you know? So, you know, that didn't work to my advantage to drive myself. But I was like, why? I told the lawyer, like, why would I get an ambulance when, you know, I even told him like the ambulance was there and like, do you want it? And I'm like, no, I know what the bill's going to be and I have to pay for it. I'm not going to And they just were like, and then later on, years to come, wouldn't you know, on Match.com, the creepy EMT fireman remembered me. Like, oh, really, bro? Like, you know, and some girl is distraught from getting plowed into by a semi, and you're going to be like, oh, I remember you. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, you're whatever. But anyway, nobody would take my case because they're like, oh, you know, big deal. I'm like, no, I'm an entertainer. Like, I need to use my neck and my feet and stuff to, like, make my money. And, like, finally, I found this really amazing lawyer. I called up a law firm. I got him to take the case. And, you know, I ended up getting a really good chunk of money. Of course, I had to give a lot of that away. Not a lot, but a great portion to the lawyer. But then the rest of it, I swear to God, Justine, every dime went to camera equipment, television equipment, microphones, a new computer, an editing suite, a nice desk that had the USB ports in it that I wasn't gimmicking around, like falling and dropping hard drives and just everything that I needed to be able to do, you know, my own productions for YouTube or online or whatever. And it's like, I think I bought maybe one tube of dollar store lip gloss and the rest of it was all huge purchases for gear. And that got me this, and this gets me. And it's important for people, like, it's important for you to go back and look at your studio and say, all right, these plugins, I bought these. What's the first thing that I did with those? Who did I record? And like, celebrate that, you know, for people that are transitioning to a side hustle or they want to really pursue their dream, celebrate your little wins. You don't have to get this big, huge, you know, Academy Award or a Grammy to celebrate and be and live and make a living at this. That's coming, but celebrate the little milestones that come along. So
yeah, it's true.
Say something on that. And then I want to talk to you about your production and your studio and all that.
Yeah, you know, it really what you just said is so true. And I just find it frustrating in a lot of ways is because people will be like, oh, that must be nice, or that's just so great, you know. And it's like, because I don't talk about it and, like, you know, kind of document like my minute to minute, you know, thing, it's, I think a lot of people lose sort of reality to the process. And they just see, you know, we live in an Instagram highlight reel reality, you know, we see people's only highlights, you know, we don't see sort of like the 12 to 16 hour days that they're spending and, like, you know, kind of, you know, working like all day and night on something. And it's just like the grind that that I personally have done, you know, and it's again to get where I'm at right now, because I've had to definitely catch up a lot, especially being in Nashville, Tennessee. In a producer sort of role, like, you have some of the best in the world here, you know, and I feel like I'm in that same sort of market as them, you know, so it can be very, very intimidating. And especially as a woman trying to do this in Nashville, where it's been this man's thing forever, 2% is in audio is women. That's it. Only 2%, 98% men. So it was all of those things, you know, I'm just staring me right in the face. So do I just kind of pummel and roll over, or do I just kind of say, nope, I work through the small stuff, the small victories, and it's the little things that you do every single day. And you look back and it's been, oh, wow, it's been 6 months. Well, I've come a long way. Or it's been a year, or it's been a year and a half, you know, and you can look back. But from the day to day sort of aspect, you don't necessarily see that shift.
No, I agree. What makes you different as a producer than other producers? And do you, I don't camp out a lot on, and I get what you're saying, cause I'm a chick, but I don't camp out a lot on, like, well, I'm a woman and once in a while I'll say you're going to get a different, perspective because I'm a chick, you know, I'm going to photograph you differently or do this differently. I don't do music production, but I do video and I do, you know, photography and all that. And I think, you know, but I think it's not even so much as being a woman as, like, I've been in this business since I was 3. Like, I just have a different perspective because I've been on, and I still am on, well, this side of the camera. Like, I think that's really important. Like, you are a singer. You didn't want to be a singer. Like, you are, and you still are. You didn't, like, just give it up and, you know, you're not mad about it or jaded or, you know, I think that adds a ton to it. What makes you different as a producer?
Well, yeah, like you just said, it's like nothing has been replaced. Like, all I've done is just continue to add more to my you know, sort of repertoire of things that I do. And it's not that I'm trying to be the jack of all trades. It's really not. It's just that I've been doing this. So you do something for so long, for so much, and for so many years, it just starts to become second nature. So what felt hard years ago is like, I don't even think about it. And so I feel like my threshold of knowledge and pushing myself is way more higher than it was years ago. So I'm able to do more stuff. So I'm able to still maintain my singing career and do production and do singing and do all these other stuff and songwriting. So nothing has been replaced or shoved aside. It's just been more kind of putting all those things in one pot and working with all that as my tools to help other people. So to answer your question, I've never put it as like, oh, I'm a woman. And I mentioned it a minute ago, but in terms of just my day-to-day sort of interaction with the industry. However, I've had people point that out like many times. I mean, I've gotten to a pissing match a couple weeks ago with this guy on the internet troll guy, just making it a point because I went to this producers conference 2 years in a row and I was the only woman to go. I was like 250 guys from all over the world and it was great. Like I had no issues, nothing like that. And he had to make it weird. He had to make a comment about it. And it's like those people that makes it weird. Like I've never really like thought it was this weird thing. In fact, like it's nothing acutely masculine to be a producer. Like it doesn't require anything like manly about, in my opinion. I feel like anyone can do it, really. It's about the ear and it's about the creativity. And it's like about seeing something in your head. Like I can hear a little crappy phone tape and I hear it. It's like I hear it in my head, the production. So for me, it was the disconnect of the technical aspect. Like how do I get from what I hear to making it a reality? And so that was what I had to kind of work through in those few years of like learning the technical aspect to it. And once I kind of bridged that, you know, the rest is easy, you know? So it's just kind of using those tools to make what I hear in my head a reality.
So for people that want to hire you as a producer, because I know that's important to you to, you know, just have that be known and because you're really, really good. Let's talk a little bit about, okay, I book a sit down and we're going to do the whole outline and everything like that. Like from start to end, how long does it take? How long can it take? How long could it go? How quickly could it go? Yeah. And just kind of give some people like the Reader's Digest of how that, because I mean, for photos, I wish that I tell people, send me a Dropbox or a Pinterest board of the lighting ideas that you like. Is it inside? Is it outside? Because it could be massive for inside. It could be super well lit and high key, or it can be moody and dark, or is it outside? And then what kind of locations and what are you wearing in it? Or what's the vibe? Or can you give me some, in the old days, you'd call it a tear because it was out of a magazine. Now it's just literally a Pinterest or a Dropbox or a Google Images. But I tell so many people just need to do that and they don't. They're just like, oh, just do whatever. And I wish people had more of they gave me more guidance so that I could knock it out of the park. I always do anyway, but it's nice to know what somebody personally really likes. So I don't have like a ton of, you know, when people come to see me, video treatment's different, but when they come to see me, it's usually me flying by the seat of my pants, just knowing, okay, they're older, Rembrandt or side lighting or moody lighting. That doesn't look good on an older person. It makes them look like freaking Yoda. Okay. Yeah. And nobody wants to look like some wrinkly green, you know, many thousands of year old men. I would put them with more of a ring light or a ring flash or just something to blow out and like alleviate any fine lines and wrinkles. Or if they are really, really young, they always want to be older. So then I am going to put them in that moody light and I am going to make them have an edge or create a story that maybe isn't there yet because they're not old enough to have lived the experience to tell one. So I like the fact, not that I'm a girl, but that I'm not 20 years old anymore. No diss to the Gen X's and millennials, but I've had some experience under my belt that I can bring to the table of, I think I can do a good job of making you look and feel good and comfortable being on the other side of the camera, both sides, you know what it feels like to just kind of feel awkward. Like, what am I doing? And I bet because you are an entertainer and a singer that you can really make your new client feel comfortable and get the best out of them. And that's what a producer, a coach, a mentor does. So let's talk a little bit about visiting you and what that looks like and what that means.
Yeah. So you book a song with me, pretty much just hit me up. It usually starts with a co-write. That's like most of my clients. We start with some sort of co-write. And then they decide that they want to move forward with a production of that. So at that point, we just pretty much hash out that pre-pro work tape. It could be a phone recording. And I'm usually doing it again on my setup. And then we decide what we want. So do we want a program thing? Do we want like live band? Lately it's been a lot of live band stuff. I've been in the studio. It seems like the last week I've done like six, gosh, I've almost done like 10 productions in the last like month and a half, all in the studio. So it's just getting the band together and kind of, you know, getting all that process. And some of them want a program thing, so I'm doing a loop or whatever it is. And then I'm usually doing a rough mix first, and then once they approve that rough mix and rough draft of the production, I try to get it as polished as I possibly can. I don't like to be sent it feels undone, you know? So I like to get it as close to what I would consider like radio ready, even if it's not. But then they're like, oh, I love it or whatever, want this tweaked or different, whatever, cool. And then I get their vocals in and we do their vocals, and then I comp tune, edit, layer, harmonies, whatever. Then I start all over again once I have all the content, and I remix it from scratch. And then I remix it, and then I send it out to mastering, and then they're love it, like it's done. So that process can be anywhere from like a month to like 3 months and up, you know what I mean? So it really depends on their schedule, my schedule, how in depth they want it. Are they in town? We're doing this remotely. You know, I have a lot of clients that are all over the world, not just here in Nashville. So it's just working with all of those variables. But I don't like to feel like, I don't like to push someone where they feel rushed, but I don't like to drag my feet where it's just like, I don't care. Like, this is going to be something I'll do. You know, I try to find that like rhythm that works for the client. And some clients like things done really, really quick. And some clients like to just be more chill and laid back. So I basically mirror my client. Like my client's up here, then I'm going to be up here. If my client is here, then I'm going to pull myself down to here. So I never work harder than my client. Okay. So if my clients, their look level is here, then I'm going to 100% all day long match that. Come at me, bro. I'm ready to work at that level. If they're more chill, then I'm going to be more chill. I don't want to feel too pushy. So it's just finding that rhythm. It's like a tango, you know, and that just kind of takes experience of kind of working with multiple different, you know, multiple personalities, you know, backgrounds, creeds, religious beliefs, political thing. I mean, I work with it all, and you can never have a strong opinion in that stuff. You have to be super chill and kind of a chameleon with all your clients so they can feel comfortable with you. Cause at the end of the day, I want their best performance. So whatever I have to do to kind of get that pulled out of them, that's my goal.
I love that. I was going to ask if you do virtual songwriting, co-writes, and how, so you do?
Oh yeah. Like 80% of it now is all virtual and all remote. So
isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a session this Sunday with my client from Paris. So I'm going to be here at 5 a.m. here at my studio. And we're going to be using audio movers. I have an engineer that I'm friends with out in Paris that's going to be engineering the session. And I'm going to be running the whole thing through Zoom. So I'm going to be producing like this, but he's going to be actually pushing the buttons, and she's going to be in the studio doing her vocals.
Oh my God.
And it's crazy. And then here we are, you know. So yeah, 2021.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
When you're talking about you're going to get the people have been wanting live performers and whatever, I would assume that with where we are, that you just have a ton of people at your fingertips, or do you have really good relationships of people in your Rolodex, like
In terms of what? Clients?
Players.
Oh, yeah. Players. Yes. I mean, we're in Nashville, so it's an over, but as I have to kind of dwindle it down, because I have so many people I can call that are all phenomenal. It's like, how do you make that choice? So for me, I like familiarity. So I like, you know, using the same four or five or six guys like over and over. I don't like using, you never know when it's like a new person, you never know how it's going to go. Are they going to be a pain in the ass? Are they going to try to, you know, take over, whatever the situation is. So I like to know, work with the same people over and over again. And then that's like my homies, you know, so I feel comfortable with that.
That's how it is with everybody. There's a lot of people like bands like that, you know, all the major players here, like they, I mean, what's his name? Charlie Daniels that just passed, God rest his soul. You know, he had the same people for like 30 some years, Garth Brooks, same band for, it's like, you know, what you're getting. And there is just something about that, not familiarity, but just that you can count on folks. Yeah. You know, it's really, really, really important. Relationships are so important in developing them. And it's just an interesting cancel society where I wish people would focus more on like talking it out and communicating and repairing something. If it can be repaired, if they're an asshole, they get the boot. And if you hear bad things about me in Nashville, it's usually because I fired somebody because they're an asshole, or they wronged somebody at a show, or I didn't like the way they were treating somebody, or we all leave the table and security lets me know at a later time that they saw on the cameras that our drummer went back and picked up all the tips that we laid down for somebody at the buffet. Or, I mean, these are all the things that people don't know because I don't really talk about them openly. And if you're at the end of this podcast, good for you hearing this. But, you know, I let people go if they're not, they're just not a kindred spirit, or they're, you know, like, or they're drunk all the time. That's my favorite at the end of the night when we're loading up and it's everybody's turn to do their own stuff. And I see them sitting at the bar, like getting hammered when there's a drum kit. Maybe it's not your drums or your toms or your hardware, but we could use some help, or you don't even pick up your own rig, or there's so much to do. Or what about the merch table and putting things away? And I really look at, you know, who comes over and says, can I help? And then when I say no, no, because I don't want them to break everything, do they kindly stand there and still wait to see what, you know, you can just tell people's sincerity and like what they're really all about. And if somebody is good to me, I will keep them around until they leave. Like, keep them around forever.
The same way.
What? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What about, so if people are listening right now that are out of town, like, where do they find you? Do you have a website? Do you have just Facebook and Instagram they contact you with? Okay, what is it?
My website is justineblazer.com, and I also have my studio website, which is 1017studios.com. So, unfortunately, I'm not performing right now. I haven't performed in almost a year. I was doing 5 nights a week downtown for 8 years. Then COVID hit. And then we got shut down, and then producing really just 100% just like took over. And like, I've been doing that, but which what I've always wanted to do. You know, I didn't move to Nashville to play like Broadway to like 50 drunk people. I didn't, you know, so my goal to, you know, be here in town was to do something bigger than I can even imagine. So for me, COVID was actually a really good thing, a really good blessing, because it kind of cut off that. And once you cut up your resources as a human, you have kind of humanistic, you know, sort of tendencies that come out that you didn't even know existed. It's like survival mode. So you just sort of hit like a new point and sort of go into another gear. And that's what happened with me. And so my threshold kind of raised, and now I'm here just doing this, and it's great. You know, I do miss performing. I really do. But I don't miss the bullshit downtown. You know what I'm talking about, Goldie, like just all the stuff and being cussed out and being called an effing B and, you know, guys grabbing you. And I mean, just every day, like every single day, I'd come home and I would have some sort of story, and I'd be either mad or frustrated or in tears or just whatever emotion it was. I do not miss that, like, at all. So
I'm pretty sure you'll be performing again, and it won't be to people calling you an effing B. The stories that people have no idea. The amount of abuse, and it's like, oh, you should report. Who am I going to report it to?
Exactly.
Who am I going to report it to and work again?
I told the managers, and it's like,
so
they don't care. Like they want to sell beer.
Yeah, they want the customers. You can't. It's so different for entertainers, guys. Like, you guys have no idea when you see me on Twitter. Rant and raven to all of you. It's because Twitter, nobody, you guys, sports entertainment, all the wrestling, a lot of politicians are on Twitter, and then all the other people are not. And it's just like, I just get so, not to have a bitch session, but we're wrapping this up. It just gets so old. Like yesterday, I posted a musician friend of mine, his dad died. And I just said, could we get some prayers for this guy to make him feel better? And like, fuck, like 2 freaking likes. Like, hey, thanks, everybody, you freaking assholes. Then I just posted a bikini picture just to do it. No text, No health and wellness gimmicks. No Amazon. Go check out my site. Buy this swimsuit for your heart and Valentine. Nothing. Just a picture. And then I just let it roll. And then some other guy that I barely know found one of the platforms, charities, things that I do. And he posted on his own, like, hey, check this out. And I was like, in the comments, my friend, you win. You don't know why. I'll let you know soon. And then today I just posted, oh, by the way, thanks for all of the kind words on my body of the swimsuit. By any chance, did anyone see the post directly below it for, and I didn't chastise and I didn't, about the prayer for my friend's dead dad. Did anybody happen? And then of course they all start, I'm like, don't comment on this. Go down there and say something, you asshole. And it's just like, I swear to God, like it's just all about like titties and drunk people. And like, I appreciate the guys, if you're listening to this, if you're this far on Twitter, you all know who you are, our patrons. Like I could put out, I'm saying a decade of the rosary and you guys will retweet it. And I can put out my boobs and you'll retweet it. Like you guys are so, the guys on there are so good, Justine. Like they get it. They get the promoting and like the abuse. And when people are like, oh, you should report it. Or let me tell you what reporting something does in our business. It guarantees you and everybody around you in your camp no work. That's what it guarantees. And it sucks. And it's just, that's just how it is. Or you can't say anything because the booking agent might get some backlash. And then the club won't want to use that booking agency anymore. And there's a lot of bands attached to that booking. It's just like, it's not the same as like HR, you know, at the post office. You know, if a mailman, you know, Paul whips out his unit at you, you know, you have got a place to go. Like basically you're probably doing a good night if you get somebody to whip out their wee wee at you. At least, you know, there's a story to be told and people are laughing and they might feel sorry for you and tip you. So different.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like I'm just subjecting myself to like all of that. If I just go, yeah, sign me right back up. And I guess 10 years ago when I was like, but F it, I don't really care, I would put up with it. But I guess I'm just at a point in my life where I'm like, I have put up with so much BS. Like I am done. Like I cannot put up with anymore. And you know, I'd rather put all my time and energy into my music and my clients and my art and my songwriting. And like, I don't know, you just hit a point where like you start picking the priorities in your life and what's important to you. And so I get asked that a lot about going back downtown, and I'm at this really big fight of like, my, do I want to like put my soul like in that spot again, you know, cause it's not the gig. I love the gig. I love the band. I love the stage. I love the light. That is not the problem. The problem is the drunk people that treat you, they forget you're a human being and they just, all rules go out the window because the alcohol and whatever.
That's
the part that is tough.
That gets so difficult when people just like, and our poor drummer, like it doesn't matter where his Tom cases, somebody thinks that's a toilet and whips it out and starts pissing in it. We had somebody pull their pants down and take a crap in his cases, or apparently like that looks a lot like a garbage receptacle to throw like your half drunk, you drink, your half whatever you've got left of a Corona or whatever, literally coronavirus in there. And like,
they are the coronavirus.
I could die. Like, and this is, guys, when you hear me saying like, I don't drink, like I didn't drink before I was an entertainer, but I certainly just don't know. I've seen it. And it's like, there's just like nothing good that ever happens when somebody starts drinking. It's just always like a bad fight or the bachelorettes. And like, I can't tell you how many bachelorette parties I'm sure you've seen a few being downtown, like that just come in and just end in like complete terror, like something just awful. I remember one girl just like pulling up her shirt and like showing her boobs to everybody, and then like somebody from the bachelor party coming in and seeing that, and it was just like
drama city.
Drama. What's the worst you've ever seen? Like, you don't have to say exact specifics, but people love stories.
Yeah, I mean, the most recent one that was sort of like the final draw with me was this guy. So it was two bachelorette parties. Okay. And this was this past summer at a venue downtown, and I was playing, you know, my, gig or whatever. And this drunk guy, like, I don't know, he's like 60-year-old white guy, whatever. He comes up to me and he's like, blah, 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 and he hands me $100. I have no idea what he's saying to me. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Thanks for tipping the band. And he hands me a $100 bill. And so we carry on with our, you know, whatever. And he's like, play a dance song. And we're like, oh, I think you want to hear a dance song. Got it. So we're playing a dance song, whatever it was, Bruno Mars, whatever. And he comes up to me. He's like, no. And he starts yelling at me. And he's like, you effing bitch. And I was like, what is going on? And he's like, I want my money back. And I was like, I am so confused. And he's like, that wasn't for you. I wanted to have a dance off with the bachelorettes. And I want to have a dance off. And that wasn't for you. I was like, sir, you tip the band, that goes to us. Like, there is no divvying up $100 to the bachelorette party. Like, there is any of that. He like throws the scene. He calls me more in profanity. The bar lets him stay. Okay. The bar, they everyone's witnessing this, and they let the guy stay. I walk off stage. And I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm literally done. Like, I cannot. Then they made me give the money back to the guy. So that was it. That was the final gig.
I wish that I would have been there, because I would have stepped up and said, sir, I'm going to give you double your money back. Okay. Like, just calm down. We're going to make you happy. And then I would have dug in your tip jar and I would have grabbed two $1 bills and I would have written in Sharpie two zeros after each one and said, here is $200, sir, and given that back to him. And then said, and you know what? We're not only going to give you your money back, but one of the bachelorette is going to give you a BJ in the back. So let's meet you back there. I would have like totally just like helped you out with that. Like, we're going to make this deal so sweet for you, sir. Like, I swear to God, drunk people with that stuff, it just gets to be.
I was just done. And so that was back in June. That was the last time I played. And I was like an acoustic show. And that was my choice, because they wanted me back. And I just said, I cannot subject myself to this anymore. I can't.
No, I'm saying that was an acoustic show that it went down that bad.
Yeah. It was like a daytime acoustic show. Oh, daytime. No. Yeah. So at any rate, you know, that's over and done with, but that is sort of my, you know, experience with it. You know, we've had some good ones too, but I mean, like, for some reason you just remember the really bad ones, you know? And so, you know, I value my like soul more than that, you know? So maybe some people are like, whatever, and they just carry on and who cares. But for me, it's like, that just does not sit well with me. And I feel like my gift is God given, and like it's not to be serving assholes like that. You know, it's to make people happy that are going through tough times. Like, that is the whole point of being a person of talent and skill and being able to sing and whatever. So that's the way I look at it. And so I don't want to just waste that on like people like that, you know.
I couldn't agree with you more. Top of the hour, everyone. Realm Network, Russo's Brand. We want to thank you for listening to chapter 2 of Hot Chicks That Don't Stand Me Up and Aren't Drunk the Night Before, because God knows why. But this is Justine Blazer. We've told you where to find her, but we'll tell you again. What's your website one more time, honey?
JustineBlazer.com and 1017studios.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram.
Under Justine Blazer. Check her out. Yeah, perfect. Because thank you so much for joining our musical journey, a little rundown memory road, and just a little taste of what Nashville is like. I know people always want to know, and we pretty much summed it up for you. Thank you for joining us. And we always do a clap at the end. You have to show your
phone. Thanks, Goldie.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Just doing the daily check-ins on Patreon. Wanted to wish you the greatest start to your week. Come on over to Patreon. We're doing a lot of customized love. We just want to make sure everybody's getting the attention that they need and deserve, and that's merited. But we still want to come by on regular social media platforms and say thank you so much for being here, both for me and for the band. Love you, and as always, stay golden. Yeah.